Listen to me very carefully.
You are listening to Bereft Hill Hardcore Asia. Host, baby.
My mission is to go and destroy and not to let anything get involved. You get punched, you get hurt. I refuse to be hurt, knocked down, and knocked out. I can't lose. I refuse to lose.
He's been mentioned as a possible opponent.
I take all comers. I don't duck any man.
Can we assume that Michael Dokes is one of the prospects?
All comers. Come one, come all. Because nobody can get close to me. They're not even close. I'm the best fighter in the world.
Points and feelings expressed in the following program in no way reflect those of the public broadcasting system.
It's fun to read books for our friends. When you can read, the fun never ends.
The reading caboose has arrived. Woo-hoo! Hi, everyone. I'm Ms. Lucy.
And I'm Conductor Clark. Who wants to read?
Me!
Great! Can someone tell me what the first letter of the alphabet is? Yes, Shelley?
A.
That's right!
A, as in? Apple.
Or A, as in? Armadillo.
Or A, as in? Assassination.
As in John F. Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas on November 22nd, 1963.
Though an arrest was made, the true killer was...
Never found. As some of your parents may have told you, Conductor Clark and I were both fired from satisfying news jobs for exposing the lies of the American propaganda machine.
That's right. But now all we care about is fun. Guess what?
What?
The government puts things in your water.
But that's next week's show. Okay, who can tell me what the second letter of the alphabet is?
Let me give you a hint. It starts with the same first letter as our old college.
Berkeley! Yes, Trevor?
B.
That's right.
B, as in book? Depository.
Lee Harvey Oswald was in a book depository when he supposedly fired the fatal shots that killed President Kennedy.
Even though the Zapruder film clearly shows that Kennedy was shot from a forward angle.
But that's not what the CIA wants us to believe.
Hey, you just said a C word.
Did I?
Yes, you did.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know what else C stands for? Conspiracy.
Cover up.
And...
Cuban connection.
At least that's what my friend Hobo Dan told me. Come on.
Yeah.
Did someone say my name?
Hi, Hobo Dan.
Hi, kids. You know, if there's anything I like more than riding the rails, it's eating ice cream. Mm. Do you like ice cream?
Yeah.
Good, because there's ice cream in your shoes.
Oh, Hobo Dan, there's no ice cream in our shoes.
You're right. And there's no justice in a government that lies to its own people. Hey, that reminds me of a song. They say that Oswald acted by himself, but I know that's a lie. Lyndon Johnson, if not Castro, planned the president's death. He did not act alone. He did not act alone. The real shot came from the grassy knoll.
He did not act alone. He did not act alone. The shot came from the knoll.
Yay! Thanks, Hobo Dan. That was fun. And the truth.
My pleasure. Bye, everybody.
Bye, Hobo Dan.
Miss Lucy, I have a question.
Yes, Ernie?
Well, my dad says this case was closed 30 years ago, and only crackpots would want to explore unfounded theories.
Well, your dad's a Fed and a sellout pig.
You know what a pig is?
Well, that's your dad. Can everyone make the noise of Ernie's dad?
Get out of here, you little son of a pig. Now it's time for... Uh-oh, it's mean old Uncle Sam.
Watch Wheel of Fortune, spend all your money, eat red meat, pay your taxes, your government's in control. Don't ask questions, you're not being lied to. Go to sleep, America. Sleep.
Phew, I'm glad that bad man's gone.
Me too. Now let's take a look at some fantastic excerpts from the Warren Report.
No, no, no. We will not be silenced. We will not be silenced.
This might be a good time to take a break. There will be more reading excitement when we come back. But remember, kids, the most important part of reading is...
Reading between the lines.
You hear me, pigs? We're here to stay. When you can read, the fun never ends.
Yes, yes. Hello, this is the Red Pill Hardcore Radio Show with me, your host, V. And I... I'm also joined by my co-host. We have Will.
Oh yeah,
Will Turbin from Dead Truth. You there?
Was that Mad TV man, son of a pig? That was hilarious, dog. You had me dying. I know they could have only showed that once. I was like, is this Saturday Night Live? And then I was like, no, there's no way this could be Saturday Night Live. And then I'm listening to the girl's voice. I'm like, yo, that's the chick from Mad TV. That's sort of they would have played that before back in the day, but I don't think they'll put that on TV now.
Well, see, you're absolutely right. They actually, you know, when a show has a skit, they'll hit that skit, you know, and it's, you know, whatever, how long the show runs, you know, when it runs like 20 years, like Mad TV, you'll see that skit at least two, maybe three times per season. I went through all 20 years of Mad TV, and no, there's only one other skit. That's it. Someone with the government said, Mad TV, no, 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 don't be doing that. They stopped. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Nicole Sullivan. I absolutely adored that woman growing up. Yes, I still do. You know, I don't know what she looks like today, but yeah, I just think she was the most beautiful woman in the world. Oh, yeah, you see that Britney Spears parody she does? Yeah.
Yeah, she does a good Britney Spears. Remember when her and Will Sasso would do... I was actually just thinking about this today. Would it be like Limp Bizkit? Keep rolling, 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 rolling.
Yeah. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah, man. You know what? As the days go by, like, you know, at first Mad TV was like, but honestly, man, like, SNL, man. There was a while there when, like, we were talking about the other day. There was a while there. There have been some good seasons, you know, back in Bill Murray's day, Chris Farley's day. There was some good SNL stuff. I haven't watched SNL in so super long though, just because like they're so super politically correct. They're NBC, you know. They're out of 30. They're broadcasting out of 30 Rockefeller Plaza.
Right.
So you already know what's going to be like. And it's interesting, too, because it looks like slowly but surely the late-night comics are starting to finally talk a little bit of junk about, Biden here, who is a pedophile, by the way, and the NSA sucks. But, you know, it's not the same as it used to be. I mean, they were these late-night comics and these talk shows and these actors and stuff like that, they've been just going after Donald Trump for so long, like, my boy, he used to, you know, like one of my boys, he's kind of like a boomer. He still watches TV. And, you know, every time I'm at his crib, and it's like during Trump's presidency, they're always making jokes about Trump, which is fine. You're supposed to do that, but they're not even jokes. They're just like, hey, now Biden's here. Nobody's really making fun of this guy that much. They're trying to make him seem to be cool. And what happens is when, you know, comedy is supposed to be cool because it's, you know, against the system. You know, it's supposed to be, you know, young, cutting edge, kind of, you know, giving a big F you to the system. And when comedy teams up with the system, it's just not going to be very funny at all.
Yeah. SNL got extremely unbearable, especially when you see if they're pushing for one candidate over the other. is supposed to be, you know, make fun of them both equally, but not, you know, pick a favorite. Well, they clearly chose a favorite. So that's I mean, that's neither here nor there, but yeah, I really think since it's just a quota, it turned into a quota machine. Okay, you got one black dude, check. You got one extremely fat chick, check. You got the dumbest bimbo in the world, check. And then you just go down the list. It's just a quota, and it's just. It feels disingenuous. It feels, I mean, trying too hard. I mean, there are some, you're obviously going to find some funny sketches, but most of it, to me, seemed to be crap, not to go too detailed into it. Yeah, so, I don't know. When you've done comedy for so long, I mean, and you know, they actually denied Donald Glover. They chose this guy from Kenan and Kel over Donald Glover. Because I actually found that out, because I was just about to jump back into SNL. When I found that out, I was like, whoa, I stopped that dive in midair like a cartoon character and backed out. And went on to other things. So, it's like, what are they doing? Donald Glover is like one of the funniest guys on the planet. But Donald Glover is somebody who's been independent and has shown some knowledge of his awareness of the world, especially Illuminati. He'll blatantly go to fabulous celebrity parties wearing, you know, the most gorgeous tailor-made suits, but, you know, with that triangle in the eye, you know, I think he's being tongue-in-cheek out loud. And I don't think the establishment appreciates him for doing that. So, of course, you've seen his music video, This Is America, which everybody has made a parody of. So, yeah, it's just, I'm sick and tired of these boys-only clubs. This is why I like to do things where I give people an opportunity to come from where they are in the world and say something. To do something. I like to set the stage. I like to get people together, get people to work on projects. And, you know, I know, Will, you are like mind as well. That's why we mesh so well together. So,
that's right. Quick story before we get to our guest here. He saw me on the side of the highway with the sign that said, Will Revolution for Food, and pick me up, and the rest is history. So you guys get out there, get nonviolent, and the time is now to take activity, folks.
Yes, indeed. All right, well, there you go. You know what? I think we are going to get to our guest. Can you introduce him, Mike, since we have a signal problem, maybe, potentially?
Oh, he's coming in clear. It's David from Nigeria, David Anuoko. Go ahead, David.
Okay.
Say hi. Hi, good day, guys.
Okay, it's loud and clear. Hello, David. Welcome. Thank you for rejoining the show.
Well, it's my pleasure joining you for once more time. I'm grateful.
Well, let's start with the biggest news. Twitter down. You guys got no Twitter. I mean, that's not really the biggest news, but that's the biggest international news that people are reporting. There's a lot of other things going on in Nigeria, which I hope to get to, which I believe, in my opinion, are more important. We'll see what you have to say, because you're actually out there. But what's this mess about Twitter? They're banning Twitter in your country.
the thing is so big that... You know, this is all about this Biafra, as I said before. So the present government, they don't want people to have access to Twitter because they criticize them. They criticize their bad governance. Twitter deleted our president's war genocide threat against the Igbos for the second time. So they got angry with Twitter, asked Twitter to be shut down, which they did. Later on, international communities in Africa and other Nigerians, they changed their VPN so they can have access to Twitter. Hello.
Okay, so just like China, basically. If everybody's in China, is if they want to get to Facebook or something, they gotta use VPN. I'm surprised there hasn't been like mass like punishments and cyber terrorism going on just to catch people using VPNs. I myself have never thought they were that effective or efficient, but it seems like they are.
Now, I was curious, what made them start to do this? Because that's obviously kind of like a last-ditch situation. Ideally, governments, in my opinion, would like to try to control people without having to shut down their social media networks. What made it get so far that they said, you know, we're going to pull the plug on this?
Like I said, my tribe, the Igbos, we have a leader they call Fighting for Biafra, our own republic. His name is Mazen Nnamdi Kanu. So, people, most of our interactions are on Twitter. So, this is our present president. He tweeted a genocide message, a threat against we, the Igbos, that he will eliminate us, that we that are talking about secession, that we want to leave Nigeria, that we don't know what happened in during the Biafra war, that if we don't take time, such thing will repeat itself. So people reported him to Twitter. Twitter deleted his tweet. So he got angry about it, forgetting that the same Twitter they used to campaign against our former president. Then for equation to balance, Twitter also deleted the tweet of our leader, a threat against this government. So the thing got balanced, but the government feels so embarrassed and they annoyed, they asked Twitter to be banned in Nigeria. They banned Twitter in Nigeria. That's their main aim. They were annoyed. Then people started changing VPN so that they can have access to Twitter. Some people were using different countries as their location so that they can access Twitter. That's what really happened. And Mali now had issue with their president. Our president asked the present president of Mali to leave office because he has lost the election through ECOWAS. Now, ECOWAS has said that the ruling of ban of Twitter in Nigeria is null and void. Our president said they don't have the jurisdiction to interfere in internal affairs of Nigeria. Just imagine that.
Now, why just Twitter, too? Obviously, Twitter's been a force for a long time. I mean, with the Egyptian Revolution and so forth. Why Twitter? Why not Instagram? Why not Facebook? Why not WhatsApp? What's about Twitter? Is that where the activists are? Or why not just shut down the whole internet, you know?
You know, it seems that Twitter is the most efficient platform. That's where most of the interactions take place, unlike Facebook and Instagram or other ones. But Twitter is a kind of where most of them are. Most of the activists, that's where they take most of their decision and discussions. And the president got so annoyed because that's where his post was deleted, not Facebook or Instagram. It was that Twitter in particular that deleted his post. That's why they are angry. And mind you, he's not a Democrat. He was a military. He had his own military regime in Nigeria, which he's still practicing. He doesn't believe in democracy. So even Facebook and Instagram, he wants to shut them down. Even WhatsApp. Well, that one hasn't been easy for him because other human rights activists, they are fighting against him.
And what has been the reaction from the citizens of the country, the journalists, the media? What has the reaction been since that from the people of Nigeria?
People of Nigeria don't take them serious because, you see, they are not really serious. The people that say they are shutting down, the Chief Justice of the Federation, he's using VPN also to tweet. They shut down Twitter, but they are all using VPN. They are still tweeting today.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm actually kind of curious. I heard this from someone, and I did not get a chance to verify this, but somewhere, and I apologize if it's not in Nigeria, but I heard somewhere in Africa a large diamond was found somewhere, and people were trying their best to get over to this piece of land where this diamond was found, and I didn't hear anything else after that. I've been kind of going through the news to see if I hear anything else about it, and nothing else has popped up about it. Do you know anything about that situation?
Well, that of diamond is not anything to us, because all over the soils of Africa, gold, diamonds, they are all littered. Like where I was living in the north, when rain falls, you see particles of gold all over. So that particular case of diamond is true. But the media didn't carry the news anymore. They just shut it down. But what happened is that most times when such things are being found, those that are in office will collide with the Chinese government, secure the land, then they will mine the diamond secretly without bringing the resources to national pockets. They will take it as their private business.
Okay. Well, and something I struggle with being an American, you know, when I travel around the world, I see a difference in, you know, something I always look at is police technology. And so police technology always translates also to military capabilities. So do you think the military there in Nigeria is efficient enough to take care of any problems it should have? Because I'm saying it's the problem and the solution. Your military, I'm just thinking. Go ahead.
Literally, they can take care of any problem, but we have two major problems in the military. One, they are underpaid and underfed. They don't have what it takes to fight. Most of them, their family, their salaries are nothing to write home about. They can't even feed themselves, let alone their families. They can't live well. Then technology is another issue. They don't have the technology exposure. Government is not getting them those technologies like you have in your country, US and other, Russia and co. So we don't have such technologies here. Not that we don't have people that can build it or we can't buy them, but some people, money that have been allocated for those things have been eaten by few people. Then another major problem our military has here is religion. Our military is divided into two, Christians and Muslims. They send Christian soldiers, military, to the Far East where Boko Haram is disturbing to kill them, while they send the Muslim northern military personnel down to this southern side to intimidate the people and secure their resources. So those are the major problems we have had in our military, except that they have the capacity to tackle any problem.
Now, can the average citizen, like yourself, can you go to the store and buy yourself a rifle if you wanted to, or a gun?
No, you can't. You can't. For our constitution, you have the right from 18 to get access to gun, but in reality, you must be above 40 years before they will give you, and before they will give you, so many processes that you can even get tired of it, that you will not buy it. So most people, what they do is that they go to black market, or like in my place, we mold gun. We go to our own locally mold pistol or rifle, any of them, and get ours. But getting it officially at the store is almost impossible.
Well, and that's very important. And the reason why I'm asking about the technological means, it's embarrassing. I mean, I moved from the United States over to Poland. So here in Europe, I've had some issues with same issues I had in the United States, cyber terrorism, hacking, you know, censorship sort of stuff, because of who I am and what I do. And so I go to the Ministry of Corruption here. It's an office that's supposed to be tackling corruption anywhere within its own government, sort of like the Internal Affairs. I show up, and it is located within a stucco sort of mud type of building, and the inside of it is very barren. There's not a lot of stuff there, not a lot of equipment, just some lockers and whatnot. I got the wand at the door, you know, for security reasons, and I'm going and talking to this agent who can barely turn on his computer, and this computer is like a Dell computer with a monitor on it that looks exactly the same hardware that I had when I was in high school. So it's like, I'm embarrassed to even be in the building. Like, I've got to set up, you know, with my war with the intelligence community, I've got a setup that takes a licking and keeps on ticking. I'm surrounded by monitors and computers. So why is it that I can't have the protective capabilities of some agency that is supposed to be protecting human rights? So I'm wondering. And I've seen some of these prison documentaries in Africa where they just basically stacking people on top of each other. Not just the prisons, but just the jails. And these the officers are having a hard time keeping track of who's medical records. They've got closets filled with paperwork. And no computers. They barely have chairs. So there is a lot of... I mean, the government can pretend like it's doing something, right? Can't they just pretend? You get a computer to the CO of a jail. Get some food over to these prisons. Can they pretend like they care about justice? I actually watched a guy bribe a police officer. This was in some African country. A guy bribe a police officer to keep someone in jail. Gave him like $3,000. Keep this person in jail. We don't want him released yet. I mean, is this really what's going on?
He's far worse than that. He's far worse than that. Once you have wealth here, if you don't have money here, you're on your own. You are literally nothing. Someone who has money can wake up, commit any crime. They will put it on your head. Or if you are wealthy, someone I know, you can decide to lock the person up for as long as you want. His or her people will come pleading or find a way. So a friend of mine had problem with, he deals in a scissor. His phones and left that the person they later killed the boy. So they started arresting them. When they came for this, my neighbor, he started running. He ran for a very while, for a very long time. Then later on, he turned himself in. He said that in the prison where they kept them, the cell where they kept them, security officials, they would come at night to come and pick some innocent people. They pick randomly on the street at night. Where the men, children, that made a murder case, they would fly them abroad and use those promises they got, replace them. And most times, say, you hear that people are missing, you look for them for years, their parents, their family will get tired and just forget about it. So they pay bribe. People that are not well-fed, prison facilities are very poor. There are some prisons here that when inmates join hand, they can push the wall down. So, and money is being allocated to them, food that are meant for prisoners. The prison warders or people in charge of food, they will take those food back to their family. They'll prepare anything they can that is very poor for the
business, and he's very, very horrible.
That is,
coming to a break, yeah, I'll hold that one.
No, we're not, we're skipping the break. Go ahead, Will.
Okay, yeah, so that's terrible. I mean, it's kind of like that in a different way here. I mean, our money obviously works, like, you know, if you're rich, you can make things go away. If you get money for a nice lawyer, yeah, I'm guessing it's not as bad as it is out in Nigeria. Is there any oversight for the police? I know here in the United States, it's our job to, you know, to check into our public servants and do that. What's the dynamic there? What would happen if I went up to a politician or a police officer over there and started filming them?
I don't get your question, please.
Well, it's a two-part question. There's two questions here. One is, what is the government oversight? You know, V was talking about how in Poland they have a ministry of corruption. Here in the United States, it's supposed to be our job, or they have police departments, internal affairs. What, if any, governmental oversight is there for the government and police?
oversight. There's really none here, because all of them, they are literally the same. Most times, those different departments of security personnel, they end up fighting themselves. Sometimes it's changing bullets. So if you're talking about there's really none here, who will oversight who? No agency that can go to oversight police, even if they have problem, they are the same. You report to this, they tell you to go to this, go to that. Before you know, you yourself, you're head of them and just give up. So the issue of oversight, I don't think it's for Nigeria, because they are not. It's not effective here at all.
And to become an officer over there, yes, to know somebody, because over here it's kind of the same way too. I don't know if you ever see American police on TV, but the idea is you're supposed to be able to pass a test, both mentally and physically. You're supposed to be able to be somewhat physically fit, because if a bad guy runs away, you're gonna go run down and chase him. But we have cops in America here that there's no way they pass that physical test. They're super fat. They couldn't do anything. They couldn't move. Do you have to kind of know somebody to be a police officer out there? How does it work? Could you become a police officer if you wanted to?
No, you don't become a police officer here if you wanted to. How it works is, first, they do it water system. What I mean by water system? There must be a Muslim and there must be a Christian. Somebody from the north, people from the west, south, east, it must be mixed. Then who you know matters a lot. If I'm fit, if I pass physical and mental tests, and another person doesn't pass, if I don't know anybody and the person has somebody in office, they will take the person. I will not get the police job. So it works like that. And most police people, you see them with fat stomach, fatigue. They can't even run. They can't even jog for 5 minutes. So, and the police, the way they mix it, it's not based on merit. That's why police work is still having a problem. Some people doesn't go for the training because they know someone. They just sit at home. They will get them their employment letter, get them their papers. They won't even go for training. They just get their uniform and start work.
Okay, and okay. I like where Will was going with his questioning. Auditing a police officer, I'm kind of guessing that would be out of the question, going up to a police officer and make sure he's following the law.
Yeah, what would happen if I went up to a police officer over there with my cell phone out and started recording them and asking them, hey, what are you up to? What would happen? Well, I mean, what would happen to me, but then what would happen to you?
It depends the type of police officer you met. If you are lucky, you come out alive. If you're unlucky, they will shoot you and term it accidental discharge. Or they will even beat you up. Or you might end up being found for one or the other, you get locked up. But they are still reasonable officers. And if it's in broad daylight, where there are lots of people, they can be videoed and they won't do much and they can't even take any action. But if it's something on 101 or if people are just two or three with them, they might decide to shoot you all and time it accidental discharge, or you get arrested or framed for one crime or the other.
Wow. That's a little intense, yeah. So...
You must be paranoid. I mean, traveling or, you know, going, just doing your thing. I mean, it's bad enough here in the United States because, you know, if you don't have a license or whatever, you know, you could get arrested. You could go to jail for that. Or, if you know, certain places, if you got some weed on you or something like that, you could worry about going to jail. It sounds to me like even if you're not doing anything wrong, you might want to be worried. Just are you worried? Are you tense just traveling around? Because it sounds like these police officers are so corrupt they could just lie and say, hey, you're a murderer, you did this, you did that, and you really don't have a way to fight back.
Just stay away from them. Just stay away, very, very far away from them. With traveling, if you don't want problem, just put in little cash on your hands. Once you drive, get them. You squeeze it in their hand, you get past. They won't disturb you, except some stubborn ones, some really trained police officers. They will make sure you park and they search you. But majority of them, even most times at military checkpoints, just squeeze something in their hand, you get past. Or you better stay very far away from them, be on your own, because if you get involved with them, argument or anything, anything can go down. Anything at all can go down.
Okay, so what if I were to go there as an American tourist, walk up to a police officer and just ask him, hey, I'm a tourist, I would like to take a picture with you. What do you think they would do?
As a typical Nigerian, they will be happy to take a picture with you, and they believe from America there is cash with you. They might look for one or the other to get some bucks from you, too.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking, too. Yeah, flash a little cash. All right. Yeah, I mean, because I think about this stuff all the time. Like, what if I were to become super rich? Because I know I didn't speak much on the John McAfee thing. I'm sorry I didn't, but I want to dedicate an entire episode to John McAfee and what I know about him because of his tangle with the NSA and his involvement with the South American governments and how they treated him. But it seems like if you're an American and you go any other third world country in the world, it seems like there is a requirement. They like Americans, but it seems like the process is, if you're going to move in, let's say you're going to buy a mansion somewhere, you need to show up first to the doorstep of whoever runs the city with a suitcase full of cash and ask for permission, and then you get to pick your house, and then you kind of got to pay a little bit of protection money at a regular rate from that point on. Does that sound accurate for Nigeria?
Well, how it happens is that the best option you have is once you come in, you lie low. If you came to enjoy yourself, you do that codedly without letting anybody or them know who you are. But if you are going for police protection, you want security personnel, you want to introduce yourself officially, it's very dangerous because they might say within them, this guy has money, let's look for a way to collect the money from him. Or they might hold you at gunpoint, ask you to do transfer or bring some cash. Even if the government, even if the security people you met are honest, some people that are working there, you don't know who they really are. They might call some people behind who are bad, ask them to approach you, try to get something from that you're American, that you have cash, that even came to the office to seek for protection and other things, that they should try, that you have cash. Or they can even do that through women. They will still be the one that will introduce some ladies to you. And once you buy that idea, anything can go down. So the best option is better you lie low, you come, you enjoy yourself, or you go. So that's it.
I want to. Okay. Go ahead,
B. Well, I was going to say, it seems like I kind of like that option better because, I mean, just to come in and lie low and you still have an option if you do get in trouble, like, hey, I'm American, I got money, and then you kind of pay your way out. So that kind of gives you an extra get-out-of-jail-free card there. I just know, like, some South American countries, you better announce yourself, you better pay about 10% of what you got in your bank account, and then you're going to pay, a steady stream of cash per month for a little protection in some of the harshest places in South America. So I'm glad that there's still a little bit of that extra. You might get away with it if you just stay out of sight, sort of thing. So that's kind of cool. Okay. What were you going to say?
I was going to bring this up. There's an article from Newsweek, and this is from, I think, a few days ago, a week ago, I forget. But it says, why the West ignores the Nigerian genocide. I won't read the whole thing. If people want, they can go ahead and read it at home. But it's a Newsweek article, Why the West Ignores Nigerian Genocide. I'm reading a little bit from it. It says, the central region of Nigeria has been trapped in a slow-motion genocide for over a decade now. More than 35,000 Christians have been massacred. Whole villages have been exterminated. 13,000 churches and 1,500 Christian schools have been destroyed. More than 2 million have been displaced from their homes, and 304,000 are refugees, according to the International Red Cross. Why do you think that nobody is looking at this as a genocide? And or do you consider it a genocide?
The thing is, like as I said before, it's on we Igbos, the Igbo tribe of Eastern Nigeria. I don't know what is happening. We have asked for independence for a very long time. Nobody accepted to listen to us. Do you know that when our leaders present our case at United Nations or EU or American Parliament, everybody will just stand up and walk off? We don't know what is really happening. There's something they are not telling us, because any issue concerning Africa or any tribe, UN, European Parliament or US or British government, they always interfere. But when it comes to this particular Nigerian genocide of the Igbos, once the Igbo name is being mentioned, every other person will stand up and leave. What is happening is what I don't really know. They are reason. They know better. You guys know better. You guys know why. They know over there why they don't want to take any action or make any comments on that. We don't really know.
Okay. See, and I don't think the UN's going to do anything. No matter what anybody pleads for, because the colonialism is still in effect. The way the lines were divided up, the borders for these countries, splitting up tribes and mushing other tribes together that shouldn't be together. So you've created that conflict, and that conflict was supposed to have wiped everybody out of Africa by now. Everybody was supposed to kill each other by now. It hasn't happened, but that was the intentions from the very start. So asking them to do something about it, they're still banking on that being a problem for you and for it to kill you. Yes?
How does the news portray this? Do they say it's a genocide? Who controls the media out there?
The media comes from... the media is highly controlled here from the federal government. And the federal government is being controlled by mostly Britain, because that's where they get their resources from. That's where they take their loan. They approve everything for them. So, indirectly, Britain controls the media here through the federal government, because the federal government, they control the media. Once you speak what they don't like, either they fine you or they collect your license or they shut you down or totally. But if you're an independent journalist, they first of all approach you with money. If you don't keep short, well, they might come for your life. So that's how the media is highly controlled here.
And see,
and so
we...
About the genocide of Christians over there? What did they say about that on the TV and the radio? Did they talk about that at all?
No, they don't. You don't tell me. It's not genocide on Christians. they just generalize it as Christians. It's genocide on Igbos. If you hear that they killed Christians or anything, 90% of them are Igbos. It's the Igbos that they always commit that genocide against since right from 1968 that the war started, 1967 the war started. The genocide has been on Igbos. The only news you get on that is normal headline news or they talk about it. Nothing serious, no action. So that's why people took to defending themselves this time around.
Yeah, it's just not a big deal. It shows up in the headlines, not a big deal. Just like the Uyghurs up in China, right? So that actually annoys. I mean, to me, if people want to, and I actually want, when I say people, I mean, actually in this scenario, the establishment and governmental establishments, different establishments around the world want to make Africans and Middle Easterns look barbaric. That's the thing that gets me. Oh, their children are having bombs and AK-47s. They're that barbaric. They'll arm their women and children. No, it's not they're that barbaric. No, the children are not natural killers, not natural criminals. When women and children have guns, it's a scenario of genocide. Because if all the men are being taken out, left and right, who's left? The women and children. And they've got to fight for their lives, right? When you see children carrying guns, that is the number one indicator that a genocide is happening. So I want people to understand that around the world. The United States presence over in the Middle East, they're wiping out villages left and right, have been. You don't, when you attack a military force on top of military force, that's one thing. But when your squad gets the order to wipe out a village, guess what? You start killing random people in the village, and you know, the father of a family has been slain. You've got a scared mother and child, or many children trapped in their own homes. The eldest child is going to pick up an AK and try to defend his family. And most of the time, unsuccessfully, because those U.S. or those French or those Canadian or whatever UN soldiers will burn them out of their homes. It's no different than the United States over in Vietnam. So I really want people to understand what warfare is. Warfare has been painted so much, so like such a over-glorified thing by the media and Hollywood. It is genocide. Warfare, when it's done at its cleanest, is genocide.
It's just like a video game here. Like a huge video game. Some people are in charge. They just watch how youths are massacred, people kill themselves, different thing, and they're banking on it. They cash out on it hugely. They sell so many things. So as these things are happening in Africa, some people are getting rich. Few are getting rich. Go here and abroad. They make money out of it. As all these crimes are happening, they make money out of it. And to make these things to keep on, they make sure that people are poor and they don't have access to quality education. Because when people are well-fed and they have access to quality education, they will start reason of a way to come out of things like this. So they don't want all these things to happen. They keep the people poor and starving. So the game continues on and on. Here you see lots of women littered around the street and children. Every 5 men you see here, you see 50 or 30 women. So the thing is so, that's how, I don't know, so bad over here.
Another thing that I wanted to bring up too is World Trade Organization says South Africa, Senegal, Rwanda, and Nigeria considered as vaccine production hubs. This is out of Reuters. What is the status over there with COVID? I know we checked in last time with the, you guys opened up. Are a lot of people vaccinated? Do people like the vaccines? What's the story over there with that?
Yeah, people don't even care. They don't talk about it anymore, just on one or two occasions on TV. But on the CDC website, they keep on dropping new cases on a daily basis. They keep on dropping new cases, but people here don't care. People that take the vaccine mostly are people who are in civil service, civil servants and some company workers. They take it. People that have been brainwashed about it, they see it as normal thing. They just want to keep their job. Few years, they are enlightened, they see what they are showing them on TV, they want to fill them up. But average Nigerians, they don't even care. Nobody wants to take it here. They say it's a rich man sickness that is not for poor people.
Wait. So, now, I'm probably taking too literal here. When you say they're dropping in cases, are they dropping it in like foreign aid to a country that's being devastated by a natural disaster, just crates with parachutes?
I don't understand.
I really want somebody to be there. I mean, if these vaccines are going around, I want somebody to be there to be held responsible. Some doctor saying, yes, this is what this is and that, and how to use it, da da da. I want a paper trail. If anything, if there's this crime being committed against humanity with them pushing this autism juice on the population, this genetic disorder creator, the silent killer of a vaccine onto the population, I at least want a paper trail of what Nazi doctors, what New World Order Nazi doctors they had go along with this, and hopefully there'll be a reckoning. I want a global reckoning one day, and where we just pick up all these people and just line them up
and give them credit cards. Yeah. Let's, before V gets us kicked off the radio and gets
I was going to say, light them up, give them all haircuts.
Give them a nice little haircut.
Give them all haircuts, let God sort them out.
Oh, now, you guys recently had your annual Democracy Day protests, and I know that had tear gas, gunshots going off. It looks like from the pictures there's a good amount of people. Tell people what Democracy Day protests were and kind of like the history about that for the Americans and other people across the world that don't know. And then let me know how this year was either different or the same.
That Democracy Day protest, we don't believe in it, especially we the Igbos. It was mostly championed by the Yorubas, and those people, they are not straightforward or honest people. They are just being pushed around by the government. They come today, they are fighting for this, they are fighting for that. It's them that brought this government that we are expressing now. They voted for him. They kicked against the man that was in office. So that Democracy Day protest is just like a planned two friends coming to showcase people that they are quarreling, but at back they are the same. So we don't value that protest. It doesn't mean anything to us. They're just fooling themselves there. So that's just it.
Are you saying that those guys are actually working on this part of the government?
They are all the same. They are all the same. They are just playing politics there.
Wow. Okay. Jeez. Yeah, it's very difficult, too. I mean, you know, I'm living in the time where I can find information at the touch of a fingertip, but it's still very difficult to get context, especially when you're an American I mean, we don't even get news from Mexico or Canada. I mean, we really don't. And something really crazy has to happen somewhere else in the world for us to sit up and take notice, which is sad. And it's also very difficult because, you know, it just helps Americans keep as ignorant as we are. So I'm very much appreciative that you're able to give us this context and stuff. And this is kind of going what we were talking about, too. This is an article from CNN. Students and teachers abducted by armed men in Nigeria's Kebbi State, governor says, and this is from about 6 days ago, several students and three teachers were abducted Thursday by armed men from a federal college in Nigeria's northwestern Kebbi State. State governor Abubakar Bagudu told CNN, sorry if I'm screwing those up really bad. The gunmen, locally known as bandits, raised the coeducational federal government college in Kebbi's Burden Yori district on Thursday, killing a policeman in the attack. And now, what happened here? And is this something that happens all the time, or is this something that's kind of more like an isolated incident? What's going on here?
It's politics. Just like you and I and Mr. Mike, we just team up together. Hey, let's look for a way and cash out from the country's treasure. It's our brothers that are in office. They just arrange some students in our region. We just pick them and say they are being kidnapped. Then we ask for money, for ransom. They will pay. Then we release them back. We go to another region or another state or another part of the same state, do the same. So they take it as a normal thing just to make money from it, use it to sustain themselves and live life. It's not that people are really being kidnapped. Is within them. They know what they are doing. They just pick some of children, take them to push, say they are being kidnapped, ask for ransom. Governments, they negotiate. After several negotiations, they will pay them off, they release the children. And that's how it is. Then some of them, the girls are being molested, some are being raped, some even get pregnant in the process and give birth. So that's how it is not that they are being kidnapped, really. It's all planned and staged. They know what they are doing there.
And so you think they're actually doing that they're impoverished, and this is a way they're making it out to be worse than they are, but they're just having to do this because of money.
Not just money and their religious interests. You know, they don't believe in Western education. They call it haram. That's forbidden. So they take all those things to play as games. They don't value it. They don't value it at all. But those few that are doing this, that are championing these students, their children are schooling in Western countries, but their masses in those northern parts, they are fooling them, using them to play all these politics and religious purposes also.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, guys. We'll be right back. We'll come back around top of the hour. Let's get, and then we'll get back to our interview.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. Center. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.